for the chanting of the verse. I'll chant and then I call on the students. That's the men and then the ladies and then the boys and then the girls, like that? No. Okay. Got it. Thank you. Need a little coaching and have a, what's your protocol? Yes. Okay. Well, the uniform tells me who's the student, right? Yeah, okay. Put it in anywhere you like. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are going to be discussing both 20 and 21. 21's on the screen. It has a fantastic two-sentence purport. And otherwise, the first one doesn't have any purport. That's what our assignment is for the morning. So, text 21. Nikshatriyam akrita gam chatri sapta kritvo. Ramascho hai haya kulapyaya bhargavagni. Sobhim babanta dashavakra mahan salankam. Sita patir jayati lokamalagna kirtihi. Nikshatriyam akrita gam chatri sapta kritvo. Ramastu hai haya kulapya ya bhargavagnihi. Sobhim bhabanda dasha vakra mahan salankam. Sita patir jayati lokamalagna kirtihi. Amen. It's okay. I'll just stay in there. Ladies.
Namaste.
No. Girls? I'm impressed. Nice going. Nikshatriyam. Devoid of members of the warrior class. Akrita. He made. Gam. The earth. Cha. And Tri Saptakritvaha. Three times seven. Or 21 times. Three times seven? 21? Okay. Ramaha. Lord Parashuram. To indeed. Haihaya. Kula. Of the dynasty of Haihaya. Apreya. Apreya. The destruction. Bhargava. Descending from the Brighu. Excuse me. Descending from Brighu Muni. Agnihi. The fire. Saha. He. Abhim. The ocean. Babandha. Brought under subjugation. Dasha Vaktram. The ten-headed Ravana. Ahan. Killed. Salankam. Along with the soldiers of his kingdom. Lanka. Sita Patihi. Lord Ramachandra, the husband of Sita. Jayati. Is always victorious. Loka. Of the entire world. Mala. The contamination. Gna. Which destroys. Kirtihi. The recounting of whose glories. And we're going to read the translation, but I'd like to Read the translation of the one that has no purport, then this one, then our fantastic two-sentence purport. Okay. Text 20. Translation. The Supreme Lord regularly takes advantage of the wars between the demons and the demigods to kill the leaders of the demons. Thus, the Lord encourages the demigods by protecting the universe through his various incarnations during the reigns of each Manu. The Lord also appeared as Vamana and took the earth away from Bali Maharaj and the flea of begging 3 steps of land. The Lord then returned the entire world to the sons of Aditi. And then this verse, text 21, Lord Parashurama appeared in the family of Bhrigu as a fire that burned to ashes the dynasty of Haihaya. Thus, Lord Parashuram rid the earth of all Kshatriyas 21 times. The same Lord appeared as Lord Ramachandra, the husband of Sita Devi. And thus, he killed the 10-headed Ravana, along with all the soldiers of Lanka. May that Sri Rama, whose glories destroy the contamination of the world, be always victorious. We have an extra kirtan going on in the temple. Okay. Purport by our illustrious Bhagavatam translators. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Lord Ramachandra was more or less a contemporary incarnation for the 9 Yogendras. Thus, they, the 9 Yogendras, have offered particular respect to Lord Ramachandra, as indicated by the word Jayati. It's now 8:20. What time should I end? Who's the timekeeper here? Huh? 8:45. 9 o'clock. Do I hear 9:15? Okay. Okay, I got it. So, I understand that it's a special day when all the students come together to lead the kirtan and offer Guru Puja to Prabhupada and chant the verses and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll try to follow the rules that are supposed to be followed when the students are here. The mentioned in the purport, I'm going to refer to a number of stories, kind of one after the next, and you kind of have to pay attention because otherwise you'll get lost. Which story am I talking about? Pay attention. So, the Nava Yogendras, they're mentioned in the purport, they're 9 brothers who are sons of King Rishabhdev. And I was told not to ask too many questions. So, King Rishabhdev was an incarnation of the personality of Godhead, and he had 100 sons, one of whom became Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj, big long section in the Bhagavatam about Bharat Maharaj. But he had a number of other sons that became perfect brahmanas. He had a number of other sons that became qualified kshatriyas. And he had 9 sons that became beyond the jurisdiction of varna and ashram. They became uttama bhaktas, something similar to Narada Muni. in the sense that they were totally unattached to anything of this world, and they had the capacity to travel anywhere in the whole universe that they wanted to. They didn't have Venus, but somehow they had that capacity to travel wherever they wanted to travel. And where did they want to travel to? They wanted to travel where they could deliver transcendental knowledge, knowledge of the world that's beyond this world, to persons who are fit recipients of that transcendental knowledge. So going way back towards the beginning parts of Canto 11, this is already chapter 4, the beginning parts of Canto 11, there's this king who is performing a Vedic sacrifice, Maharaj Nimi, and one of the rules of Vedic sacrifices is, once you start, you don't stop. Just like deity worship. Once you start, you don't stop. Or you're chanting Gayatri, you don't stop and start and stop and start. It's a Vedic rule. But when Maharaj Nimi saw the Navayogendras, he stopped. He broke the rule. Because the presence of these exalted souls was so significant, he stood up. He paid his obeisances again and again and welcomed them and then did what is appropriate when you have such exalted association. He began inquiring from them into the nature of transcendence. So what we're hearing is their explanation and the comment, the two sentence purport says, Sridhar Swami says, or Sridhar, who is Sridhar Swami? Sridhar Swami is, I learned a lot about his life actually during, while you were down here having your kirtan mela, I was up in New Jersey having a seminar on Tattva Sandarbha. Very different. Transcendental, both are transcendental, but quite a different kind of exercise. Sridhar Swami is referred to again and again by Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas as the primary source, one of the three primary sources of reference for all of the Sandarbhas. Would you like a little lesson on how he composed the... At some point in time, some of you students will be going on to college, maybe, most likely. And some of you, after finishing college, will go on to graduate studies. And when you do graduate level work, you have to do some research. And when you do research, one of the rules is you have to say, what are the sources that you consulted for your research, and how do you plan to use them? You'll find that out if you get to graduate study. Jiva Goswami didn't go to the college. He just understood the rules, and he followed them. So, in the very early stages of Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says, here's the rules I'm going to follow. And it's really simple. It's three things. One is Anukarana. He makes just exactly, following the same procedure as Vedanta Sutra, he makes a declaration. All of you students, you know this one. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Like, that's just a declaration, really short. Atato, achieving the human form of life, now is the time to inquire into the nature of Brahman, transcendence. Just a statement. So that's how he does. He makes a statement. The statement is actually connected to Vedanta Sutra, but he doesn't say which one. But he says, I'm not going to say which one, I'm just making a statement. And then the second thing he does is, to support the statement, I'll make quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, a verse or multiple verses. What he's doing is, he's giving a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. But since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said we don't need a commentary on Vedanta Sutra because there's already Srimad Bhagavatam, so So he doesn't say, I'm making a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, but he's making a commentary on Vedanta Sutra by making a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Very, very intelligent. So after the statements of, that's part two, statements from Srimad Bhagavatam, the support, the anukarana, the declaration. Then the third thing is, he says, I'm going to make references to Sridhar Swami. And from time to time, references from Ramanujacharya or followers of Ramanujacharya that were proper followers of Ramanujacharya. And sometimes I make references to scriptures that I have seen or I haven't seen, but Madhvacharya has seen, and I trust Madhvacharya's authority, and that's what I'm going to do. That's the methodology. And he follows it throughout the whole of the Sandarbhas. He's a man of honesty. He was known from his childhood, like you boys and girls, thoroughly honest. It is said about Jiva Goswami, even in his dream, he couldn't dream of something that wasn't honest. You're thoroughly honest. It's an important qualification for getting out of this material world. If you're dishonest, you get in your stuff. Don't get stuck. So he stated very clearly, most of the texts that I'm making reference to, I've seen with my own eyes, so I know that reference is valid. Around 200, I haven't seen. But Madhvacharya has seen. Anyway, so Sridhar Swami, and then he says about Sridhar Swami, I'll accept those statements that are in accord with Vaishnava teachings. And Jiva Goswami was such a scholar, he not only wrote the Sandarbhas, but he wrote a commentary to the Sandarbhas. Sarva Sambhadani. And in the commentary to the Sandarbhas, he says, he explains, this is stories and following your rules. Sridhar Swami came in a line, it's not Lord Chaitanya's line, it's Vishnu Swami's line, and he came after Shankaracharya, historically. And obviously he came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after Shankaracharya, and Shankaracharya, I didn't know this until I read Tattva Sandarbha. Shankaracharya read Srimad Bhagavatam. Did you know that? Shankaracharya read Srimad Bhagavatam? And not only he read Srimad Bhagavatam, but he wrote 8 verses called Govinda Astaka that are glorifications of Govinda that are from pastimes that only are found in Srimad Bhagavatam, not in any other text. He read it. And he glorified Govinda, but he didn't make any commentary on the Bhagavatam. But his followers knew, because they were scholarly followers, they weren't just fellows. They knew that he had read Srimad Bhagavatam and he was interested in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami explains that he had a strategy. He put, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. He took the interest of Shankaracharya in Srimad Bhagavatam together with an explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam that was largely, almost entirely Krishna conscious or Vaishnava, but enough of the other that looked like, yay, Shankara's teachings are right in the Bhagavatam, in his commentary. It was a strategy. For that reason, in the line of Vishnu Swami and in the line of Sridhar Swami, was Ballabha Bhatta, or Ballabha Acharya. You can read about him in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he took exception to Sridhar Swami's commentary, said he made mistakes. But I've made a better commentary than Sridhar Swami. Would you like to hear it? And you know what Mahaprabhu said. Anyone who's not faithful to the Swami, which can mean Shridhar Swami or can mean the husband, I consider a prostitute. That kind of silenced Balaram. But Jiva Goswami understood why those other sections were there, because he wanted the followers of Shankaracharya to read his commentary, and if it was only Krishna conscious, they go, you know, we're not interested. So I had sprinkling here and there, strategically, enough that they read his whole commentary and got Krishnaized from his commentary. That's what Jiva Goswami explains. Okay, we lost half the class. Was it that bad? They have a schedule. I'm just joking. Okay, so that's in the purport, the reference to Shridhar Swami. So Shridhar Swami, authority that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted, Jiva Goswami accepted, and we also accept, says, Lord Ramachandra and the Navayogendras were around, they were near contemporaries, more or less near contemporaries. So this means this is Treta Yuga, this whole situation with King Nimi and the Navayogendras coming. It's more or less same age, same time as Lord Ramachandra's presence. And because of being contemporary, the Navayogendras, are offering special respect out of all these lists. And in these lists, there's very kind of jumps out of the page at you that says two things, the Lord's protection of his devotees, because going back a few verses, it's protection and protection and protection and protection and protection. And that's one of the essential topics of the Bhagavatam, is Poshanam, the Lord's protection. So it's only mentioned here as similar to Canto 1, Chapter 3, there's mention of forms of the Lord. Canto 2, there's another list of the incarnations of the Lord. Here's a kind of it's a mini list of incarnations of the Lord. This is transcendental subject matter. People can't know about this unless it comes in this descending fashion. They can't know about it. It cannot be known otherwise. So by that disclosure of descending knowledge, he's Ishana Kata. This is another one of the 10 topics. Isha means controller. Anu means follow. And Kata means subject matter or topics. Isha Anu Kata. He's just doing some Isha Anu Kata. And by making reference to these situations, in the mind of a qualified person like King Nimi, or someone who's regularly read Krishna book or Srimad Bhagavatam, they then know it invokes the whole message of that lila. Just like here, the reference is made to Ram in the verse. So Ramchandra killed the 10-headed Parashuram. And what did I say? Jeez. Ravana. 10-headed, thank you for being good listeners. 10-headed Ravana. Then, just before that, it says, he's the same. Lord Ramachandra is the same as Lord Parashuram. Now, how does this work? Of course, if you haven't read the other sections of the Bhagavatam, you're wondering, what's he talking about? How does this work? How is this? Lord Parashuram was different. He was in the Bhrigu dynasty. He was a Brahmana. Bhrigu is one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma, and he's Brahmana. And in the line of Bhrigu, Parashuram appeared, so he was a Brahmana. So Parashuram is a Brahmana, and Ramchandra appeared in the dynasty of Ikshvaku. He was a Kshatriya. So they're the same person, same Lord, because that's how it, the expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are compared to waves in the ocean or waves in a river. How many waves are there in the ocean or in river? Well, count them up, and as soon as you're done counting them up, there's more waves. It's too many to count. Because the source of everything, because that's the tenth topic, in the Bhagavatam is the shelter of the other nine topics, this Ishanupata and Poshanam and everything else. One is the shelter of everything. That's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is the ashraya, the shelter of everything. And there's different categories of things that are the subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam. So these two personalities, Parashuram and Lord Ramchandra, they're expansions of Krishna. Or you can say they're the same Lord. Although the Leela is different, very different, there's a principle that's a thread that's like all of the other incarnations, or most of the other incarnations of the Lord. That is, three things. I'm not supposed to ask too many questions, but I think you all, if you know this following verse, students, I'll say it out loud and you're invited to chant it along with me. Ready? Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sanstapanartaya sambhavami yugege. Really strong over here. Wow. Very good. So those are from Bhagavad Gita chapter 4. Those are three reasons why from time to time Krishna appears. He does three things. He gives protection to the devotees, the sadhus, their devotees. Pritranaya, sadhunam. He admonishes or eliminates or diminishes the influence of the duskritis, the demons. And he reestablishes dharma. Dharma sangstha. Restores dharma. Three things. So each of these in this Isha Anukata, this list of the glories of the glorious activities of the Supreme Lord, it's protection, it's protection, it's protection. He does so in different ways. So in the descendants of Haihaya, they were a kingly order, but they were so powerful, they became proud. So the solution isn't don't become powerful. The solution is make sure your heart is pure. You ready for some math in the middle of Bhagavatam class? Okay, here's a math. I'm going to say it twice. It's a mathematical equation I made up. The fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. Ready? You're going to do it again. It's very simple math. The fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. So the descendants of Haihaya had become very pious, and because they were very pious, they had fruits of piety. They were very powerful and this and that. But their heart wasn't pure. They did activities, pious activities that gave them pious merit, but their heart wasn't pure. Problem. They became so offensive. Anyway, they did some bad things, and Parashuram didn't like those bad things. So he took up this mood of anger, because he's Supreme Lord, he can do transcendental anger, it's different than our anger, and took his chopper and went and destroyed all the kings. But he didn't do it just one time, he did it again, and he did it again, and he did it again, and he did it again. He was relentless. What was he doing? He was ridding the earth of demoniac kings. And that's one of the things that the personality of Godhead does. Now one might ask, you know, different ways of asking this question. Well, if he's the personality of Godhead, why does he allow demoniac kings to begin with? He has to come and kill. You with me? You got the question? Either of you. You got the question? God is good. God is great. He can do anything he wants. So why does he make a creation where there's demoniac people that he has to come and kill? He just, you know, just don't have any demoniac people. And then he doesn't have to come and kill them. Then he doesn't have to look like a bad guy going to kill demoniac people. People criticize him for that. What's the answer? Yeah. And one other thing, and that is inside the body, there's the animating force, the Atma, the soul. And the soul has very tiny qualities like Krishna's qualities. And Krishna's qualities are big. The living entity's qualities are small. But qualitatively, we have free will, just like Krishna has unlimited free will, because we're part of Krishna. So to have free will, you have to be able to say no as well as yes. So some foolish living entity said no to Krishna. Now Krishna doesn't take away their free will because they said no. Otherwise it wouldn't be free will. They have to be able to say no. And then if they say no, then there's this place. I mean, not Alachua, but, you know, the material creation. Material creation, yeah. Exactly, I'm getting there. You're way ahead of me. She's a teacher. So, because there's free will, we can misuse it or we can properly use it. But without the ability to say yes, then there's no love either. It's just force. Someone's got you by the collar and saying, you love me, right? And there isn't a choice to say no. Yeah, I love you. That's not what love is. There's a choice to say no. And some foolish living entities say no. And some say no really big time. That's the demons. So from time to time, Krishna, you know, helps those fellows. He liberates them from that misuse of free will by, you know, relieving them of this body that's the fruit of, there's so many no's, misuse of their free will. Now they still have to say yes. They can't go back to God until they say yes. But he can relieve them of the burden of that negative response towards him. So sometimes he does it this way, sometimes he does it that way. The previous verse, it's on 9:15, 16 minutes before 9. I'll try to finish at 9. In the previous verse it says that Krishna takes advantage of struggles between the devotees and the demons and the demigods. Why? To vinashaya chaduskritam, to get rid of the demons. So he doesn't like stir up the trouble, but sometimes, you know, when there's a trouble, he's fine with him because he just takes the side of the demigods and annihilates the demons. This is one of the things that the Lord does. He gives protection to the devotees and he annihilates the demons and he establishes principles of Dharma. He has his unlimited variety of how he does it. But that's the principle of what he does. So I'll also share something with you that I learned during Tattvasandarbha that I'm almost certain you've never heard before. Unless you've read Tattvasandarbha. So In addition to what all these verses are saying, the protection of the Supreme Lord and the glories, Ishanukata, describing the glories of the personality Godhead as he appears in this world. Because that's one of the six questions. Going to Canto 1, Chapter 1. Can you describe the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world? So it's unlimited, but he gives principal ones. Principal forms of the Lord. And then says Krishna is the source of all of them. Krishna is the source of everything. So in addition to giving protection, there's the, well, it's a feature of protection. There's the protection against, you know, oppressive forces of the demigods. But there's another kind of protection that Krishna is very kind in protecting us against our own contamination. Especially the contamination of pride. Like is mentioned here in these verses, that Indra was given protection from Vritrasura, but what did the problem with Vritrasura come from? It came from his pride. Do you know what Indra did? Indra not only offended the chief priest of the demigods, Brihaspati, but after Brihaspati was gone, he was given a backup plan, Plan B, Vishwarup. Vishwarup is a qualified brahmana, and he can help you regain your kingdom. So Vishwarup did it. They got their kingdom back, and they saw, wow, this Vishwarup is good. He really knows his stuff. We heard that he knows how to produce Soma Rasa by mantras. And Soma Rasa is better than the Sunday feast nectar, I'll tell you. It's the nectar of the demigods. It brings longevity and very nice. But the warning that Lord Brahma gave to Indra is his mother, Vishwarup's mother, is from the Daitya group. So Vishwarup, when he was doing the Soma Rasa Yajna, you've seen how when Brahmanas do yajnas, they say mantras so fast, who knows if even they know what they're saying, what to speak of what the audience knows what they're saying. Yes? Some of you have seen that? I've seen it. So along with the mantras he was chanting, he was offering Soma Rasa to some of his mother's relatives in the Daitya side. And it was going on for some time. And Indra found out, what? He is giving Soma Rasa to the Daityas? You know what he did? Proud. He came, took his sword and cut off the three heads of Vishwarup, killed his brahmana preceptor. Big problem. Big sin. Killing a brahmana. So he did penance and austerities and this and that and the other thing, but it wasn't enough. The father of Vishwarup did a big yajna to create a demon that would kill Indra. He got one of the mantras wrong. He created a demon that Indra would kill. Better know your mantras. So Lord Vishnu came and saved him. Okay, it's time to go. Yeah? Gee. You didn't get to hear the Kena Upanishad story. You can hear the recording later. It's a nice one. Or read Tattvasandarbha. That's another choice. Okay. That's why it was 9:45. Okay. Well, I'm just waiting for the little rustling to settle down. That's all. So Indra had pride, and it's part of the mission of the Supreme Lord to protect his devotee from pride. Indra's kind of got a stubborn case of pride. It gets checked and then it's okay for a while and it goes back again. So in Tattva Sandarbha, there's a reference that Jiva Goswami points to. I'm a Jiva Goswami fan. I've become more and more and more as I study his writings. He's not afraid to bring up opposing arguments. He liberally brings up. He knows the strongest opposing arguments, and he brings them up, and he knocks them down. So one of the arguments he gives is, some people say, a Purva Paksha fellow says, well, wait a minute. you're attributing qualities to Maya where she feels ashamed. There's references in the Bhagavatam where she feels ashamed, so she stays some distance from the Supreme Lord. But how is this? Maya is an energy. So you're attributing personal qualities to an energy? Come on. Sit down. So Jiva Goswami says, for sure, Maya is an energy, but she is also a person, and gives a reference from the Upanishads that supports Maya is not just an energy, she's a person. I didn't know this pastime until in the Upanishads there's a pastime. Didn't know that either. There's some, but here's the pastime Jiva Goswami refers to. Just like the verse, text number 20. There was a battle between the demons and demigods, and the demigods were getting defeated, or they were losing. So Lord Vishnu intervened, and they prevailed. So now the demigods are having a big celebration. We prevailed. Forgetting it was Lord Vishnu, not them, but they were thinking fruits of their piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. So they were proud. And one of the protections of Lord Vishnu is he protects his devotee from pride. He did it in a very interesting way. He appeared as a yaksha in their midst. The demigods were having this celebration, yay, along with others. Gandharvas and Chanaras and Siddhas and so forth. And they were having a big festival, the Maruts. And a yaksha came in their midst. So they were wondering, who is this fellow? So if there's a sequence. They sent Vayu. No, first they sent Agni to go find out, who is this fellow? So when he goes to find out who the fellow is, the fellow, who is Krishna in the form of a yaksha, says, who are you? And he says, I'm Agni. What are your powers? And here's my powers. I can burn anything. You want to know who I am? I'll tell you, but first, here's a blade of grass. See if you can burn this blade of grass. And he couldn't burn the blade of grass. So Agni went back to the demigod and said, I couldn't find out who the fellow was. So it happened two more times. So then Vayu comes and, his gift got an assignment. Find out who this is. He comes. The yaksha says, who are you? I'm Vayu. Tell me your powers. These are my powers. I can move anything. Can you move this blade of grass in my hand? And he can't move the blade of grass in his hand. So Vayu goes back and tells the demigods. I couldn't find out who the fellow was. So then they're really concerned. Who is this fellow? So they send Indra. And then Indra comes, and all of a sudden the yaksha disappears, and in his place, Uma appears. And so he recognizes Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, and says, who was that? And Uma says, that was the personality of God. He just didn't like you guys feeling proud. That you were thinking you're the ones, and so he came to curb your pride. You can't even burn the blade of grass or blow the blade of grass out of his hand. He's the all-powerful. You derive your power from him. Make sure you don't forget it, was the message from Uma to the demigods. So then the demigods, this is in the Upanishads, the demigods then reach the conclusion there is a supreme personality of Godhead, and he's a person. And the one that informed us was also a person, who is a power, a potency, but a person. Nice. That's a Upanishadic reference. He's following exactly, Jiva Goswami is true to his word, he's following his methodology. He makes statements, and then he supports the statements with something from the Bhagavatam and then something from these other references. This one from Kena Upanishad. And the more one hears from proper sources, the glories, infinite glories of the personality of Godhead, it's very, very natural what happens. What naturally happens is the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam, that transcendental love for Krishna becomes awakened. Just from this process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or in this case, something that happened for me just studying Tatrasandarbha, is hearing Jiva Goswami explain Srimad Bhagavatam and its elements. I'll end with this, and that is, before I began studying Tatrasandarbha, I wanted to be clear, what did Prabhupada say about it? And in one statement, there's many, but one statement Prabhupada says, one can achieve perfection of life simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he added, if you carefully study the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, you'll understand the elements of Srimad Bhagavatam with much greater clarity. So when you continue hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the mind is going to be much more focused to receive that message of the Srimad Bhagavatam in its fullness. So I recommend it. It tends, at times at least, to go in a little bit into the technical side. But if you bear with what appears to be a little technical, it's just jewels. You open the box and it's just a box full of jewels. That's the jewels of Srimad Bhagavatam's message. So then as the sweetness of the Bhagavatam by hearing it, you know, that the jewels glitter and glisten, and not like now I've got riches. It's something that moves the heart in attraction for Krishna in very special ways. So that's my conclusion for class this morning. 9 o'clock. It's 3 minutes to nine? 2 minutes. One question? Ragatmika. Do we have a microphone? It's very different without the kids in the room.
Thank you, Maharaj. First of all, I have two questions. What does Sandarbha mean?
Sandarbha means weaving.
Weaving of
literally.
The
literal translation means taking verses of the Bhagavatam and weaving this verse together with that verse so you get a tapestry. Mm. Weaving.
Thank you. And your mathematical equation. So I was thinking of false ego, misidentifying with anything but the real Atma, real self. What one of those components of the equation would false ego be, or even all three? I don't know. I'm just...
Well, you can say that's the second part of the equation, the heart that's not pure. Because, so say it the other way. What's a pure heart? There isn't a pure heart as long as there's false ego. And how do you get rid of false ego? My goodness, pretty obstinate. Before we even get a body, we got false ego. We just get cast into the field of the material energy, living entities in time, and there comes false ego, and the false ego covers the living entity before you even get a body, before you even do anything. How do you get out of that? Bhakti dissolves false ego. That's the heart that's pure. Are we allowed? One more. That's it.
I like to comment on that hard thing, but let me ask the question first.
Okay, go ahead.
Parshuram is considered a Leela avatar, but also I've read that he's considered a Shaktavesha avatar also.
Why is that a problem?
Pardon?
Why is that a problem?
No, contradiction? But I'm wondering if you could say something about that, him being a Shaktavesha avatar.
I'd have to research it. I'll research it during the day and I'll report back to you tomorrow.
Okay, and the hard part. So I was thinking that because all the living entities in the material world, because of impure heart, they're here.
Because of?
Impure heart.
Yeah.
They're here. Yeah. So I'm thinking that we should qualify that impure heart and put more impure heart.
Oh, there's degrees, of course. There's degrees. So you have heard, I'm sure, Prabhupada saying that the litmus test for devotee and demon is, do you accept Krishna as the personality of Godhead? No, you're a demon. And there's degrees of that. Oh, she's going to answer the question. No, you're going to add another question.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, you have privileges. You're a senior master.
Forgive me. No, senior. Look at the question I'm asking.
Okay.
What does 21 times mean?
What is what?
21 times. Parashuram killing the.
I don't. Shakti. What does it mean? Well, he traveled and he traveled.
21 different places.
No, he went. This is my understanding. This isn't from Acharyas. This is my understanding. He went zoom 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 zoom. And then he went to rest. And then he went around again. Did it again. And then he went around again. All over the countryside. So you want to know what it means, though. Not the number. What does it mean to say 21 times he did this?
That's the... 21
generations. Not he went here and there 21 times. So 21 times 21. 21 generations, and he went around all over the place 21 times.
No, this generation is just one time, so he is not the one generation.
He just made one tour and that was it.
No.
He made 21 tours.
This is from Habar. He wiped the Kshatriyas, then another set came back. He wiped those out, then another. You see, because not all he was able to kill. Some of them hide in caves and took shelter with brahmanas. Some took shelter with animals and so on. He wiped those out again. Then under his Sarchava, he wiped those again. So 21 times. Don't speculate.
Well, they're demons. Demons don't hold white flags.
So that's how the 21 times came.
Could you? I'll do my homework. You do yours. You bring me the reference, print it out.
In the Mahabharata.
Yeah, it says this one, the 21 times reference. Okay.
Bhishma was explained to Yudhishthira.
But you give me a printout.
Yudhishthira was asking the question, well, how... And then Bhishma explains, you know, that the Kshatriyas, they came up back again. Then he...
Okay, give me the thing in writing.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki.